The next case is 03-1648, State Ex Rel, James Adams versus Alucem, Inc. Mr. Bain.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Dennis Bain. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Ohio Industrial Commission. I would reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal for my co-counsel, Mr. Sharif Rabah. Let me begin by acknowledging that Mr. Adams suffered a very, very, very serious industrial injury involving a traumatic amputation to his left arm. To his credit and to his perseverance, he was able to rehab and eventually return to work. Any aspect of the briefs in this case that I've prepared or any of the oral arguments that might be perceived as diminishing or downplaying the significance of Mr. Adams' industrial injury, I apologize for. The commission agrees that Thomas should be retroactively applied. We just don't want to apply it retroactively in violation of Ohio Revised Code 412352, because this court has consistently held that 4123.52 is important for several reasons. It's important because it helps to protect the financial integrity of the state's disability fund. It's important because it provides all parties with certainty. And it's important because it prevents stale claims. We believe the Court of Appeals erred by circumventing 412352, and in doing so, they improperly applied this court's holding in State Ex Rel Drone. Drone involves a situation where the Bureau on its own acknowledged that they had made a mistake and went ahead and retroactively fixed the mistake by awarding back compensation. This court in Drone said this does not involve an application that triggered 412352. This involves a situation where the Bureau did it on their own, so the two-year limitation expressed in 4123.52 does not apply. In reaching this result, the Court of Appeals erroneously looked at one small portion of Ohio Administrative Code 4121-3-34E1 and claimed that it required the Ohio Industrial Commission, notwithstanding the fact that no application had been filed for PTD, that it required the Ohio Industrial Commission to go through all the hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of workers' compensation claims in this state, looking for those few situations where statutory PTD might apply. We believe this is plainly erroneous because there is no evidence before the Court of Appeals by way of stipulated record or before this court that shows that the Industrial Commission was even aware of this claim in 1984. That's because the Industrial Commission only acts as an adjudicator in two specific situations, by way of appeal from an allowance or disallowance of a claim, or by way of an application, such as an application for permanent total disability. The Court of Appeals erroneously decided that, well, since he filed for a workers' compensation claim in 1984, we don't dispute that. It's called the first report of injury, but that's filed with the Bureau, Your Honors. And if the employer objects to that decision, only then does it go to the Industrial Commission. There is no evidence anywhere in the record that the employer objected and said that this man did not suffer a traumatic amputation of his left arm in 1984. And for that reason, the Court of Appeals decision is erroneous. I was trying to think of a good analogy that would really kind of point out the position the Industrial Commission has been put in by this decision from the Court of Appeals. This court has rules for the Common Pleas Courts as to how long specific cases should sit on a docket. For instance, I believe a workers' compensation appeal is either 9 months or a year. A more complex, like medical malpractice case, might be 3 years. Regardless of what it is, I think everybody can agree that all these cases come to the court by way of complaint. Just like in the Industrial Commission, all the issues that they adjudicate come by way of appeal or by way of application. Appeal from the Bureau's or from the Bureau's initial determination that was either objected to by either of the parties or by way of application for, say, PTD or a permanent partial award. Imagine if somebody read into your rule regarding the recommendations for timeframes for determinations of certain types of civil cases that are brought forward by way of complaint asking whatever your damages are, whatever relief you ask for, whether it's monetary damages or injunctive relief or whatever it may be. Imagine if somebody took selectively one small portion of that rule and told the common pleas judges, no, it doesn't matter whether a complaint was filed. We expect you to go down to the police department and check all of the accident reports and decide whether you think a complaint should be filed. That's what the Court of Appeals has told the Industrial Commission they need to do. And the way they did it was by improperly construing Ohio Administrative Code 4121.3-34.
Counsel, the underlying issue here is for this injured claimant who, by reason of his injury, was later determined by another case to essentially have two claims, right? Or two matters for the loss of the hand and the loss of the arm.
Right.
So that's more money. And that is really a court decision that made that happen, correct?
Yes.
So then the question is, if he was improperly awarded less money than he should have been, is this statute a bar to making his compensation reflect back from the date he presented the claim? That is the notice to the commission, at least. He presents a claim for a lost arm.
He initially, yes, in 1984, he suffered the injury,
right,
lost his arm, filed an application with the Bureau.
And he and his lawyer don't know that he's entitled to anything more than what he got at
I agree.
At the first point. So you're making an argument about, well, how do we know, or do we have to look? These are really claims that have now been presented in court. So now a court has said, go back on this one. The question I have, does that get past the language that says the commission shall not make any modification? The court really is doing this. So does that blow past the statute, or is the statute still a bar? And if it's not, if a court makes the award, do you have any sense of, is this a rare occurrence, or are there tens of thousands of these out there?
I don't know.
Well,
I know there's been another appeal that I recently
Client would have some sense of that, I would hope. I mean, they didn't send you over here and say, gee, this is the only one, or?
Well, there's more of them. I just recently filed an appeal.
Give us a sense of more of them. Does that mean
I just
there's
know that
a couple hundred, or does that mean there's a couple thousand?
I can't answer that. I just know I have one additional case that I recently filed in the Supreme Court. And notwithstanding that, if the court's saying in equity 4123.52 doesn't apply, that's one thing. We can apply, and if you tell us to apply it retroactively to the date of injury, for goodness sakes, we will. But I don't think you need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because that's what the Court of Appeals
well,
did.
Well, there's certainly some who would argue, well, this could cause great financial hardship on the system. You're not here to tell us that.
I know of at least one other case. I know it'll cause a hardship on the Industrial Commission, because just as there's no system and process with the Common Pleas Courts for them to be walking down to the police department looking for accident reports,
well, you're troubled, no system. You're troubled by the language that says they have to go looking for these.
Right. There's just, when you read the code in its entirety, it's very clear. And if I could just point to the
But if we if we don't incorporate that, do your concerns go away then?
No, not entirely,
if we were to just leave it, you've got to go to court and establish in court that you're entitled to this, and that's how you don't have a claim unless you go to.
You're absolutely correct. I can't come here and tell you that it's going to be 10 or 1,000 additional claims of these types that are going to come forward. But what I can tell you is that this court has consistently said that 4123.52 protects important interests, namely certainty on behalf of all parties, employers, and other potential injured workers who might be injured somewhere down the road.
Well, let's go back to my question then. When a court does it, because that's what's happened here, mm-hmm. Court of Appeals says he gets it all the way back. Does that conflict with this statute, or
because the statute? If this court said in equity, we're going to apply Thomas way back to the date of injury, notwithstanding 41552, that would not conflict with the administrative code that I'm arguing about right now. But in order to do that, I believe this court has to come up with some sort of a weighing of policies. The protections that this court has discussed in 412352, certainty on behalf of employers and future injured workers, staleness of claims.
So 412358, where it says the commission shall not make any modification, would apply to courts as well.
Well, if this court were to say that we're not going to apply 412352, I don't think we have the problem that I'm arguing about as far as the administrative code, but I think you just have to do a weighing test to really do that with policy factors favoring and disfavoring.
So your principal concern is you don't want the commission to be in a position where they have to go looking for all of these and it's their duty to
discover. Yes, I don't believe there's a duty at present day for the commission to do that, and there's no system and process in place for the commission to do that. And unless you have any more questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining 3.5 minutes.
Can one of you comment on the equal protection issue here? Is there an equal protection issue? In the Court of Appeals opinion?
I don't believe so.
Well, the Court of Appeals opinion treats PTD claimants differently, does it not? Those who statutorily receive benefits for permanent total disability and those who receive PTD benefits not statutorily or vocationally, if that's the right term. Doesn't the opinion treat them differently? Some can go way back under the opinion, and some go back to have a statute of limitations.
Well, I believe that the proper way is that regardless of whether it's statutory PDD or by way of Stevenson factors in application, I believe they can only apply for 2 years back their application for PTD, as I understand it, Your Honor.
Well, doesn't the Court of Appeals opinion here permit going back for this?
Yes, they do. Person? So statutory PTD applicants would be able to
That's
get
my point.
Way back, whereas somebody had just forgotten to file their claim or a doctrine of latches applied, they would be 412352 would preclude them from getting 2 years.
So you don't see
I do understand what you're saying now, Your Honor, and I agree with it because statutory PTD.
It was not a hostile question to you.
Yeah, I understand.
Don't assume it was a hostile question. I'm curious.
Yeah, I understand your question now, and I agree that that's a potential problem because why should one class of injured workers who is nevertheless PTD be precluded from potentially years and years of compensation where another class is treated with some favoritism?
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Rebaugh, you want to wait for rebuttal? Right. You want to take rebuttal?
Yes, please.
Okay, all right, just so I know. Mr. Cohen.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. I'm Edward Cohen. I represent Jimmy Adams in this case.
Why don't you start out with a response to the Chief Justice's raising an equal protection issue?
It's a very interesting question. I had not thought of that before. But
statutory PTD claimants different, certainly, than ordinary claimants?
The response to both your and Chief Justice Moore's question, Your Honor, is that the legislature has carved out a specific category for this particular type of claimant. They've done so both out of logic and compassion for this type of injury. What the legislature has told us and what this court has told us over the years is that in the very worst of injuries, short of death, the courts and the legislature are going to provide a lesser standard, if you will. Such that even in this situation, if an individual such as Jim Adams is working, we're not going to look at the question of whether or not they The vocational factors come in. We're not going to look at their age, their education, their prior work. We won't even look at the fact that they're actually working. That if an individual qualifies under the standard of 412358C, they are going to be presumed to have been hurt seriously enough that this compensation will be awarded to them. It's almost a misnomer to call it the same thing, because normal permanent total disability involves an evidentiary analysis. It involves, it's interesting that Thomas itself, the case that led to all this, is very different than the Adams case. Because in Thomas, it was a loss of use case, not a loss of limb. And there were all kinds of evidentiary issues at work. When did that individual lose his loss of use? When did the, when did the medical evidence say that? That's where the notice questions that the Attorney General are raising today become much more in play. But I was kind of reminded during the first argument today about some of your questions about, isn't this a terrible set of facts to be making this argument? And the reason that this is a terrible set of facts for the Attorney General's position can be boiled down to the stipulation that they made with us in the Court of Appeals, which is part of this record. And that stipulation is that this claim was allowed for dismemberment of the arm on the date of injury. We're not here 20 years after the fact trying to decide when this individual lost the arm, when they became aware of the loss of arm. They have told us that they agree that Jim Adams lost his arm the date of this injury. When I've had to speak to novice groups about workers' compensation and explain, well, what's the whole thing about? The first thing I say is that if you had to characterize it all, it's about notice. The workers' compensation code, if you look at the whole thing, has to do with when do you notify people of what and how do you do it? And essentially, it's making a claim and making it clear to the persons involved when you're making some type of an argument. That's what 412352 is there to protect, and it's a good statute. It has lots of applications, but it has no application here, because what the Court of Appeals told us in this case is that under the standard, in many situations, such as in the drone case and the general refractories case, if they know about it already, we don't get to 412352. There's no obligation on a claimant to come forward and make another application for something they already know about, because 412352 is a notice statute. It's not so much about a procedural threshold requirement that you have to make an application before anybody's going to give you anything. It's that, well, you got to make us know about it before you can your rights come into play. And here in this case, they knew about it. They knew about it the day of the injury.
Can you help me understand the reach? Because we've had some wildly disparate opinions as to what the effect of this has. Is this limited to those type of cases involving, like, loss of a limb or amputation, or are there other types of injuries and illnesses that would fall under this case? I don't understand the system well enough to know that answer.
Certainly. The Thomas case and its application, it looks at the statutory PTD elements of 412358C, which says that if you lose an arm and a leg, you lose two hands, you lose 2 feet, you lose 2 eyes, or any combination thereof, a person is presumptively entitled to permanent total disability benefits. Where the issue comes into play here is, well, when does the commission and the bureau become aware of that? So to answer your question, it has some reach in the grayer areas where, and the commission's argument has a lot of merit in those areas when we're trying to analyze when did the bureau and the commission really know about this. So in those situations where a person starts to lose the sight in an eye, and we can't really tell, was it on March the 2nd, was it 1992, whatever, then you start to get into some real issues as to what the reach of this might be. In this particular case, this isn't even a 412352 case. I'm kind of puzzled by the blind adherence to it by the commission in this case. I understand why they want it to apply, but you have such a weird set of facts here. You have an individual who gets his arm taken off on the date of an injury. And I think the great irony here is that this particular man, I appreciate Mr. Bames, acknowledgement of the severity of this injury. There's a 21-year-old guy who's working as a maintenance electrician in a factory. He gets his arm taken off in a terrible accident. He's lucky to be alive. And yet, through his effort, through the employer's effort, the employer did a great job in this case. Within a year, they retrained him to a whole new job. They trained him to be a welder, and he's been there ever since. He's still there. So for 20 years, this guy has continued to work. He's the poster child for rehabilitation and for what the entire system is intended to do. What the legislature has told us is that if you get this kind of an injury, we are going to give you special treatment. They have carved out special treatment for these kinds of claimants because they're particularly injured. So there's no floodgates here.
If I could clarify then, any cases involving loss of some part of the body permanently, while you may have an issue of when it occurred, this case would reach all of those?
It would reach all of them if it qualified for the two body parts. Okay. Absolutely.
And then the second question is, do you have any sense of how many that is? Tens, 20s, thousands?
My sense of it, Your Honor, is that it's very few. And this is all anecdotal. But the reason I think it's very few is that to have an injury of this severity, several things are going to have to happen before it can come into play. First of all, you're going to have the juxtaposition of the age of the claim with the decision in Thomas in 2002. Second, you're going to have an individual who already hasn't been found to be permanently and totally disabled anyway, because to have these kinds of injuries, most of these people are already permanently totally disabled, and they've been so for years and years and years before Thomas ever rolled around. Or they'll have to be alive, because individuals with this type of severity are probably dead. So the class that you're really talking about this applying to are people who had a catastrophic injury years and years and years ago who weren't already dead or applied for permanent total disability and were granted.
And isn't that the real question, whether the statute of limitations applies to that first class of people that you described? Isn't that just the essence of what we're here about?
Exactly. That's exactly true.
And you're
true.
Arguing that statute doesn't apply? Is that your point?
It doesn't apply because of the way of the retroactivity of Thomas. It was very interesting to me to hear Mr. Boehm.
So these aren't statutory classifications. One is a court classification and one is a statutory classification created by the legislature. Have I got that correct?
The court was interpreting the statutory classification and was explaining what 412358C has always meant. Because the wording of 412358C is identical today as it was in 1984, Thomas has full retroactivity to that statute. What the Court of Appeals did was to say, all right, it's a legal house of cards every time we talk about retroactive application, but it's a very valid principle. Thomas defined what the law was in 1984. The day this man was injured, the day the Bureau admitted that they knew that this man had a loss of an arm, he was, under Thomas, entitled to permanent total disability benefits. Their position is that he still had to come forward and apply for it. The ancillary rule that Mr. Boehm was referring to is the Industrial Commission's own administrative rule, 4121.334E. That was effective on June the 1st, 1995. And what that requires, and it is not ambiguous, it requires that once the commission becomes aware of somebody qualifying under 58C, they have an affirmative obligation without motion, without application, to publish an order granting permanent total disability benefits. That order can be appealed and objected to if somebody wants to come in and say, no, you're wrong, that evidence isn't correct, and they can have a hearing. But the statute 412358C doesn't condition it on having an application. The administrative rule doesn't condition it on having an application. And what the Court of Appeals said is, well, the statute says that, says they're absolutely entitled to it. The Holridge case explained how the statute was changed from the 1959 amendments, when it used to be a prima facie presumption of permanent total, to an absolute entitlement for permanent total. Once they became aware of it, their own rule, my argument in the Court of Appeals was the common law said they had the obligation to do it anyway under 58C, but that's moot now, because their own administrative rule sets forth the obligation. So what has happened is that we don't have a statute of limitations problem, because it has taken us back to that point that 52 doesn't even apply. There was an absolute affirmative obligation on the part of the commission and the Bureau to do it. There's no situation here where they have to go looking for it, as Mr. Boehm was saying. They have to search the records to go find people who qualify under this standard. They've admitted in this record, in this stipulation, that they knew about it on the day of the injury. And once they're aware of it, the absolute entitlements come into play.
So your argument is that it is not like the analogy he gave of going down to Common Pleas, going down the traffic record, searching through them. You believe there is a system in place already that identifies this group in a fairly easy fashion? Is that what you're alleging?
You know, I don't know that I can tell you that the system is so great that it identifies those people very well. All I can say, Your Honor, is that in this particular case, it identified him. He was identified. He filed a claim for a dismemberment. It was allowed for dismemberment of the arm, and they have stipulated in this record that they knew about it then. So we don't have to go looking for anything. That's why this is a bad set of facts to be taking this up to this court. This is a factually determined case on 58C and on the administrative code. And that's why the Court of Appeals had no problem with it. They looked at this. They looked at the reasoning of Thomas, which kind of parallels this. I think the question, Justice Pfeiffer, about is this a judicial application of the rule versus the legislative application is apt. But in this particular case, we don't even have to get to that point, because this has nothing to do with making an application. If you read the statutes, as your honors have, 58C and 4121-34E have an affirmative obligation and an absolute entitlement to the benefit. Holdridge says there's an absolute entitlement to it. 58C says there's an absolute entitlement to it. Thomas says there's an absolute entitlement to it. And what the commission is asking this court to do is to say, you may be entitled to it. This may all have happened to you. We may have known about it all along, but we can sit back and wait until you ask us for it. There are two places in the workers' comp code where that is different, 4123-58C and in the scheduled losses that kind of parallel 58C for people who lose, for instance, a finger or part of a hand or loss of use. Once the evidence is on record of those losses, that's where the entitlement kicks in. And when these things are administered before the Industrial Commission, that's always what the evidence is. Where's the medical report that says they lost the use of the hand? Where's the medical report that said they suddenly lost all useful vision in the eye? And that's the date that they pick. 412352 comes into play because at some point you got to put the evidence before the commission. And that's where the fairness to the commission comes in. No, they shouldn't have to sit around forever waiting for claims to be made. But that's not the case here. You have a statute that says he was entitled to it the day of the injury, the day they admitted that they knew about it. So all this talk about 52 is completely inapplicable to this case. This is a simple case that this man was PTD the date of his injury. They say they knew about it. They've stipulated they knew about it. And their own rule says they're obligated to pay it. If your honors have no other questions, I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Mr. Rabab, you have about 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Mr. Cohen. My name is Sharif Rabab, and I represent the Industrial Commission. Your Honors, we wholeheartedly agree with Mr. Cohen that the fact that this case breaks down in notice. Notice that the Industrial Commission needs to adjudicate a claim, and notice that the Industrial Commission never received from Mr. Adams. Now, what Mr. Cohen was trying to tell you was that the Industrial Commission stipulated to the fact that the Industrial Commission knew about this claim. However, that's not so. The Bureau of Workers' Compensation knew about this claim in 1984, and they are two completely different entities, Your Honors. Now, if we look at the way the system works, when Mr. Adams filed a first report of injury in 1984, it was allowed. Therefore, there was no reason for it to go to the Industrial Commission. Therefore, the Industrial Commission did not have the notice that it needed to adjudicate this claim. There's two ways that the Industrial Commission gets jurisdiction in a claim. The one is an appeal from the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, which did not happen here. The second way is through an application, and that's at the heart of the issue right here, Your Honors. If we look at the statutory interpretation of 4121-334 of the Ohio Administrative Code, when properly read using the whole statute rule, the statute reads, when the Industrial Commission receives an application for statutory permanent and total disability, the Industrial Commission shall refer the claim to be reviewed by a staff hearing officer. Now, that's where the Court of Appeals and Mr. Adams have it wrong, Your Honors, because this reading means that this reading explains that the Industrial Commission needs an application to hear a claim. I see that my time is up. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. The case is submitted.